Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gramling. I am joined by Jenny Brentis of the Weekside Podcast. Jenny, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Gary.
And we are joined by Connor Orr of the Weekside Podcast. Connor, how is it going?
It's good. You kind of introduced the show like you and Jenny were hanging out and then I imposed on this. But
well,
hi.
Well, we started the first eight last week, Connor, so I guess, you know, maybe that's what he was setting up.
Well, I was going to say,
the
two of you are probably wondering why I called you in here on this Sunday evening. And
you're both fired.
No, but we're at part two of the mock draft, and I want to get into it like this. As you know, we are a podcast of laws. And one of those laws is that when we do the mock draft series, we do not undo picks from previous iterations.
Oh.
Now, when we taped last week's show, and I will recap the first eight picks in case you missed the show. If you missed the show, shame on you, but I'll do you the favor and recap the top eight picks in a second. We are at pick nine with the Broncos, but pick eight to the Panthers, Jenny and I gave them Justin Fields. We finished the show, and a few hours later, the Panthers traded for Sam Darnold. Now, do we revisit that pick? I say no. And frankly, I think if Justin Fields falls to the Panthers, they should take him. I don't think you can pencil in Sam Darnold as your surefire quarterback of the future. So that's my take on it.
Okay, so before the show started, I said that I was definitely in support of redoing the pick. But you know what, Gary? I think you've changed my mind. I didn't realize that it was a law. You know, I knew that you said you didn't undo picks. But now that I know it's a law, I'm feeling a little bit more constrained by last week's pick. You also lay out a good argument. Maybe they're not banking on Sam Darnold. Maybe they end up trading Bridgewater and it's Darnold and a rookie. You know, I would say that the call is up to you, Gary. It's your show. Connor and I are just guests.
You were kind of brought in. Yeah, Connor, you are a juror in this. Jenny just made a terrible argument on behalf of her client.
I did.
There's no reason to not change the pick because the circumstances have totally changed. Unless it is your turn and then you're going to just make the same pick again, in which case we just going to have to move on. Like we're kind of vice gripped into this, but I think it's, if I'm the Panthers and I got Sam Darnold, I don't want Justin Fields because I've already picked up Sam Darnold's or promised to pick up Sam Darnold's fifth year option. Although I guess you can promise a lot of things in the NFL and not follow through on them, but,
or in life.
Yeah, that's true. I absolutely think this should be up for discussion. Mostly because I'm almost done with the mock draft that I'm contractually obligated to complete, and I have a different scenario, so it's going to mess me up today on this podcast. So it would make it a lot easier for me if you would open the floor and maybe redo the pick. But don't do this on my accord. I've clearly imposed already on the podcast. So
let's walk it up to eight. Let's go through the first seven picks, and then we have like eight more picks to do, but we'll recap the first eight here. Jaguars took Trevor Lawrence. The Jets took Zach Wilson. The 49ers took Trey Lance. The Falcons took Penei Sewell. That was the first sort of curveball here in our, we'll call this a what they should do kind of mock draft. And then obviously if your team does not match up with what we have assigned them, you have a right to be upset. So the Falcons took the offensive tackle Sewell. The Bengals took an offensive tackle Rashawn Slater. Dolphins took Ja'Marr Chase. The Lions took Devontae Smith, and then the Panthers. And we gave the Panthers Justin Fields. And again, look, this Sam Darnold fifth year option, it's only guaranteed for injury, right? That's still the rule with the new CBA, right?
Correct.
I don't know. Are you banking on Sam Darnold after the first three seasons that he put together here? I think you go with Justin Fields.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. And again, this is just from one person, you know, but, you know, I didn't hear a lot of glowing things personally about Justin Fields during this process. That doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of other people and slash analytics to support the fact that he may be the second best quarterback in this draft behind Trevor Lawrence. No quarterback has a better completion percentage to throws beyond his first read than Justin Fields. So that kind of knocks down some of the initial criticisms. He's a phenomenal athlete, so I think there's a lot to like about him. But, you know, that's not things I can personally vouch for. So I don't know if you're asking me if I'm the GM of the Panthers, I have Teddy Bridgewater and Sam Darnold. That feels good enough to me. And I use that pick to get something else I need.
You know,
Go ahead, Jenny.
No, I was just going to say that the Panthers were grasping for quarterback options this offseason, and it would make sense that they would try a lot of different things. So one could be trading for Darnold. The other could be drafting a quarterback.
The worst case scenario, well, no, this is not the worst. Worst case scenario is they both end up being bad quarterbacks and then you still don't have a quarterback. One bad case scenario is that Darnold plays really well and it's like, oh, well, we just spent the pick on Justin Fields. Well, move Justin Fields for a pick next offseason. I mean, it's shaping up to be a very weak both draft class and free agency class for quarterbacks. And who knows? Maybe Tom Brady is retired. Maybe Ben Roethlisberger is retired. There's probably going to be a need for quarterbacks next offseason. And Justin Fields, had he stayed in school again, might have been QB1 in the 2022 draft. So I guess let's put it this way. I will officially open it up to an alternative for the Panthers here. But let's talk about who it would be. They're not going to take a receiver. Our top two tackles are off the board. They're not definitely not taking a receiver, but I would assume they're not. Kyle Pitts, probably the guy, if you're looking for the long-awaited heir apparent to Greg Olsen there in Carolina. So it is, and if either of you want to throw out another name here, I just think they're going offense because they took all defense in last year's draft. So for our purposes, does this come down to Kyle Pitts versus Justin Fields?
To me, the thing that's complicated about that, right, is you're saying that they're not going to go receiver, and Kyle Pitts is not really a great blocker, and he's probably going to play more X and slot than anything in the NFL. Like, he's just going to be a big tight end. You know, I don't think that, you know, he's not, to me, I don't imagine him doing a lot of traditional tight end things, you know, so if receiver is already crowded, then I don't think that that's a pick you make. I think value wise, you probably just take him and figure it out if you're Carolina and you move the pieces around, because it would be a phenomenal gift to Sam Darnold. But I'm not, I don't know. It's an interesting question. I mean, having Fields there etched in stone already just sort of boxes us in a little bit. That's, you know, I'm very bothered by this.
I'll unetch. I have officially unetched Connor. How about that? He is
wow.
Unetched. And
so you're
and
breaking
you can,
the law.
If you are ready to stand on the table for Kyle Pitts, we can do it here. And I do think Pitts is a better blocker than people give him credit for. I think he's so overwhelmingly good athletically that I think that he's not a good blocker, but I think he's a passable NFL blocker. I think they will be able to play him in line at some point, maybe not very early on, but Pitts versus Fields. Will you blow this up, Connor? Will you swipe the draft card that was on its way in and replace it with your own?
I don't think Pitts gets this far. I think that the Panthers could use a lot of help on the offensive line. I mean, you have like guys like Elijah Vera Tucker, you have Christian Darrisaw, you know, a lot of these guys that I think, you know, might be somewhat interesting and worth mentioning there. Maybe Tevin Jenkins is a little bit too far down for the conversation here, but I don't know. I like that idea. I mean, to me, you're building something. And you're trying to make your offense work, and you can bump Cam Irving down because you just signed him. I mean, right now your left tackle is Cam Irving. You know, I think that there's probably, you know, some tea leaves to be read there that's probably not 100% part of the plan either in the long term. So I don't know. I open up the floor to all picks, not just Kyle Pitts and Justin Fields.
It is interesting that Pitts is still on the board in our mock draft.
Yeah, what was going on?
But now that I'm looking back at the other picks, I mean, I feel fine about all of them. I mean, I was part of the process. So,
well, the two tackles came off the board 4 or 5, which is kind of the twist for the Panthers here.
True. And you guys didn't do trades?
No.
No, no trades.
That's another law, Connor.
Okay, so.
How dare you?
Clearly not a listener of the show, although I didn't know the other law that you can't take picks off the board. So,
all right, then I'm okay with either one of those two. I will yield, and then I will take my rightful turn in the next area here. I'm going to let you guys kind of finish this off, and then I will enter the discussion with the next series of picks.
Jenny,
you know what, Gary? Let's just stick with it. Let's stick with Justin Fields.
I was going to say it, but I wanted to incept it and hear someone else say it.
You've converted me. You're a skilled lawyer, Gary Gremling.
Justin Fields remains with the Panthers in our mock draft, and that does it for our opening recap here. And now we can start the show. All right, we are running down 8 more teams. It's actually just the next 8 picks in this one. We don't have any duplicate teams at this point in the draft, not until you get down to, Jaguars at 25 or something like that?
Yeah.
No, Dolphins at 18.
Oh,
That's the first duplicate.
Of course.
But that's for part 3. So we are at the Broncos at number 9, and I guess this starts with the quarterback conversation again, and for the purposes of our mock draft, Mac Jones is still on the board. And the question is, look, is Mac Jones as good as his sort of, draft season stock would suggest at this point, or is he a guy that's just too much of a reach in the top 10 here?
That's a good question. I think that a lot of this fits because, you know, I don't know. I'm like right in front of me, for example, like, you know, I have the Sports Info Solutions College Handbook, which is great. I really like that in the lead up to the draft. And they had written a lot about how he's sort of best suited for, you know, a downhill sort of play action offense, which you could argue fits well with Denver. And if you're just like, you know, if you're reading the tea leaves, I mean, you know, Mac Jones was coached by, you know, a lot of the people on that staff. You could probably have close relationships with the Broncos. The Broncos have a very old, entrenched coaching staff, guys who have been around for a really, really long time, and guys who are probably going to have good relationships with, you know, Saban and his staff, you know, which are kind of look similar. And even now, like, you know, Doug Marrone's there, Bill O'Brien's there. They weren't there last year, but it's not going to be hard for Pat Shurmur to reach out to those guys. And if you remember, too, the Broncos did a ton of work on Jerry Jeudy last year, so they were in Tuscaloosa for a lot of this. They watched a lot of film. They're already prepared for a lot of this. George Payton did not go to Mac Jones's pro day. He skipped it to go to Justin Fields's pro day, so read into that how you will. But I like Mac Jones here. I have him going to the Broncos in my mock draft. It makes sense to me. I just don't think they could go into the season with Drew Lock. That would be crazy to me, especially if you're Vic Fangio. It's year 3. You've had 2 losing seasons. Are you really signing up for another year of Drew Lock?
Yeah, and they haven't made any bold moves at the quarterback position this offseason, and so it does seem like it's setting up for a draft pick, and that would seem to be in line with, you know, you make the change this offseason to having George Payton running football operations instead of John Elway, and it would make sense that you have sort of a new person selecting the quarterback, and you clearly have a need at the position, and they haven't done anything else to address it, so it seems like this is the last route for them to go.
They wanted some Fitzmagic, reportedly, this offseason, didn't get it. The other position they're probably looking at is our defensive side of the ball stuff, probably linebacker and cornerback are the other things that come up with this team. But I continue to wonder about Mac Jones. I'll wonder about it until he wins his third or fourth Super Bowl, whether he is just the... is he a style of quarterback that just doesn't work as well in this league anymore? And I guess the pocket passer always works. We see it every year in the postseason. Those are the guys who play deep in the postseason. But the guys who don't have that movement skill, that ability to create their own time and space, if they fail, if they're not as sharp maneuvering in the pocket as they have to be, it's like they face plant worse than pretty much anyone at this point. But I'm open to Mac Jones here. I'm not a Mac Jones guy, but I do think, for the reasons Connor laid out, it makes some sense here. I guess it would come down to like a Mac Jones versus Micah Parsons versus Caleb Farley, Patrick Surtain type of debate in our pretend war room. But
is it weird that exactly for the reasons that you said, he's a completely outdated prospect? I was like, that's why he's perfect for the Broncos. It's
yeah.
like Pat Shurmur is going to be like, this is the kind of guy that we need on our team. Like, you know, it's like that entire team screams outdated offense, you know, and they got rid of the guy who was going to run the next gen offense. And then they said, no, we don't want the Kyle Shanahan system anymore. We want the Pat Shurmur offense. And so this is exactly why they would take Mac Jones. Like, it all makes complete and total sense to me.
So we will have five quarterbacks in the top nine.
Wow.
And the last time we had five quarterbacks in the first round was the 2018 draft, and in that case there were four in the top 10, I believe, and then obviously Lamar Jackson went 32nd. So this would be something.
I was looking at the Broncos play action rates with Drew Lock on Saturday night and just weeping because they were really low and because that's how I was spending my Saturday night. But
that's what I was gonna say. That seems like a stronger reason for weeping than the actual statistics themselves.
So the Broncos at nine,
at your house.
The Broncos at nine are taking Drew Lock, quarterback, Alabama, and that might exit. Well, we'll see. We'll get to the end. That might exhaust the quarterbacks for our mock draft series here.
You mean Gary, you just said Drew Lock, quarterback, Alabama, which
I
is
did.
Really
I
something.
Even,
you even
I
typed
even,
it in the Google Doc, which is really impressive.
So his name is Mac Jones. His name is Mac Jones. We're giving Mac Jones rather than a recommitment ceremony to Drew Lock at that point.
But if somebody wrote the wrong name on the draft card, that would really be something.
Connor would have to
forego our first round pick. That's how committed we are to Drew Lock. We just
that
want
would be
all
a
of
headline.
You to know that.
Yeah.
Connor would have to swap one of his special draft cards in on the way to the podium. All right, we are at the Cowboys at number 10. A lot of people circling defense for them because they just didn't play very good defense last year. They have some holes on the offensive line, which we all kind of assume that Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, Tyron Smith thing was just going to go on forever. Most of those guys are still there, but they have some holes on the O-line. But obviously, they have the receivers in place. They're paying quite a bit of money to their running back. They have their quarterback. So you're probably looking at, cornerbacks? If you're Dan Quinn is running that defense now, and not that it's the classic Seahawks style. Everyone has their twist on that now. But if you're going to have Dan Quinn as your defensive coordinator, you have to be able to generate a pass rush with that four-man rush.
I like cornerback here. Their secondary was so bad last year. They've made some changes this offseason. Obviously, Keanu Neal, Dan Quinn's former draft pick from Atlanta, they brought in. They drafted Trevon Diggs in the second round last year, so perhaps he takes a step forward. But I think cornerback is the pick.
I'm totally on board with that. I think Patrick Surtain, J.C. Horn, you know, one of those guys that works for me. That makes a lot of sense. Because, you know, the defense was just so unbelievably bad last year. And I think that picking one player there to make them marginally less bad is probably better than an offensive player that makes a good unit or a really good unit just a little bit better, you know, if that makes sense. Although Kyle Pitts still being on the board really is freaking me out a little bit. But
as it should, and maybe they could take Kyle Pitts and then roll out a second football on every offensive snap and distribute it to all those guys that they're They've just invested so much draft capital and now cap space in their receivers and tight ends at this point. I'd forgotten they'd given Blake Jarwin that big contract since he got hurt last year. But yeah, the cornerbacks. Caleb Farley, there's rumors about some medical stuff with him. Does that knock him down? I think he was the top guy at the position coming in. But I think you're, if we're talking cornerback, we're probably talking Farley versus Patrick Surtain at this point.
It seems like you were leaning edge rusher.
Yeah, there's just no great edge rushers in this draft.
Yeah.
There's some interesting guys. I think if you had your choice between a top-of-the-line cornerback and an edge rusher in this year's draft, I think you have to go with a cornerback.
I agree.
Connor, do you have an opinion, Farley versus Surtain? I think if Farley's healthy, I'd go Farley, but I don't know. Those are just like the rumblings now in draft world.
I have a good Patrick Surtain stat if you want to hear it.
I do.
So last year, quarterbacks targeting Patrick Surtain had an expected points added per game of -15.6. It's incredible.
Wow. Yeah,
that's really, really good. I'm a little bit jaded because I covered the Jets when they made the D. Milliner pick, that you know, of highly drafted Alabama cornerbacks. That said, I think you can't view those things in a vacuum. I thought he was very good against good receivers, and I think he's the guy. You know, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Let's do it, Patrick Surtain, NFL bloodlines. Jones has loved that to the Cowboys. Which brings us to the Giants with the 11th pick. Plenty of defensive needs here. On top of that, possibly offensive tackle again. I mean, how long are they going to be able to sort of lean on Nate Solder, who's been something of an underwhelming free agent addition there anyway? So, again, our top two offensive tackles are off the board, or the top two, sort of consensus top two in Sewell and Slater, which kind of leaves the board open for a bunch of defensive guys. Or, again, I don't know, Evan Engram is there. Kyle Pitts is probably better. But we'll talk it out here.
I don't know. The Dave Gettleman factor here is so, it just looms so large, you know. Asking around, it seems like Joe Judge is gonna have, you know, a little bit more of a say in this, and he's got a really interesting direction in terms of where he wants to take this. But, you know, I don't know if the temptation is going to be there for Dave Gettleman to take another offensive lineman, because it does two things. It fits into his philosophy, which he's been very steadfastly married to for a long time, which is, you know, the big people, you control the line of scrimmage, and, you know, they're not going to be able to control the line of scrimmage with that offensive line this year. There's just no possible way they're going to do that. And so do you take someone like Elijah Vera Tucker, who's gonna, you know, stand in for Kevin Zeitler and, you know, be that middle, that midline guy for a long time for you, and it helps Saquon Barkley does something like that, or does he do something out of character? There's still a lot of really good receivers there. Do you give any consideration to the fact that one of these guys that you could take, these pass-catching weapons, even though you have a glut, so to speak, you're also taking it away from the Eagles, who are picking right behind you? Are you worried about that at all? Does that concern you? I don't know. So I think that there's a lot of at play here, but Gettleman is still Gettleman, and he does have a pattern in kind of the way that he's operated over the years.
Yeah, I mean, if our mock had gone differently and either Sewell or Slater was still on the board, you could see the Giants going that direction. But of course, that is not the way that our draft has gone, Gary, probably due to me mucking things up. So it is sort of impossible to notice that Pitts is still on the board. And I know that's not the purpose of the show. In a sense, Gary, it's supposed to be talking about their needs and then matching them to the teams. So yeah, I mean, offensive line, cornerback, edge. But, you know, they need playmakers, and they made a big splash receiver signing at free agent, but that's not to say you can't get another player. And I agree, Pitts is better than Evan Engram. And, you know, Joe Judge's mentor is really going all in on the tight ends this offseason. So maybe he'll follow suit.
Pitts is really interesting here. I think Micah Parsons is interesting as just sort of a do-it-all linebacker for Patrick Graham. He certainly fits, you know, what you would want in sort of a Patriots style, let's do a lot of things well type of defense here. I will say, Connor, the one thing with Gettleman factoring in the Eagles, remember when he signed Golden Tate a couple years ago and just like gave the Eagles a comp pick in exchange for that signing? I don't know. I think he wouldn't mind at all helping the Eagles a little bit when it comes right down to it.
What's the one position the Giants don't draft in the first round ever, right? It's linebacker.
Yeah.
The Giants, I don't think, have drafted a first-round linebacker since Carl Banks, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that our Lawrence Taylor?
Yeah, because I remember one time I had to do some like random mock pick, and there weren't a lot of great options on the board, and I guess I just was like, maybe Alec Ogletree is in the mix, and I got skewered for it, Connor, because of that fact that you just mentioned.
Same exact thing for me and C.J. Mosley, because C.J. Mosley at the Chelsea Piers draft event, you know, when you cover the Giants, you just run around to all those people and say, have you talked to the Giants? Have you talked to the Giants? Have you talked to the Giants? And he said, yeah, and they said that they want to draft me. And so I said, great. and I wrote it, and then everybody got really upset, and they took Odell Beckham anyway, so everything worked out.
All right, Kyle Pitts, that's a curveball. I like curveballs.
Do you though, or did you just invite me onto the show? I've made a mess of it, and next year you'll just say to Connor, hey, let's just not mention to Jenny we're doing the show.
I was grinding my teeth as I said I like curveballs. No, I do like curveballs.
Okay.
I'm okay. Yeah. I mean, if he was there in some unbelievable scenario, I would guess that they would trip over themselves to turn this card in. So, yes.
All right. Let's do it. Kyle Pitts to the Giants. Only, I guess, one more season of watching Evan Engram have the ball bounce off his hands a little too frequently. Which brings us to the Eagles. And look, the Eagles, I think the Eagles ideally would land Kyle Pitts in their dream mock draft, though they apparently don't think so since they moved down from 6 to 12 here. But if you're the Eagles, you're probably still looking at wide receiver as a need. You're probably still looking at cornerback for a need. That's been the case for like the last 3 years, those two positions there.
Right.
And then tight end. But if Pitts is off the board, you're probably not going to see another tight end go in the first round here.
Yeah, receiver is just such a dire need for them right now. And if they are going to go forward with seeing if Jalen Hurts could work this year, or at least giving him a shot to prove himself, then you need to put players around him. But we've been saying this in every other circumstance the last few years. Well, Wentz needs better players around him and got to get receivers. And why isn't this working out? So, I mean, it's just, as you said, Gary, it's been the perpetual question.
Yeah, I think we're pinning ourselves a little bit too, because we've taken of the three big receivers, we've kind of taken the two bigger bodied receivers off the table. And so now if you're the Eagles, right, you're looking at a Jalen Reagor, like Waddle combination maybe. And, you know, I don't know how much, I mean, that's good, you know, but do you want a little bit more of a variation there in terms of, you know, body type and really receiver type? I don't know if that matters to them at this point, or if they just want guys who are going to get open, but, you know, I don't know.
I do love it. Nothing makes me happier than complementary skill sets among receivers. I just think it's one of the most magical things in the world. But I do think Jalen Waddle's too... I think he's too talented to sort of pencil him in as a stylistically does he fit. I think he is a guy that you just say, if we can't make him fit, we have bigger issues than just filling out a receiver depth chart.
That's true. And if you're Nick Sirianni, you would probably like to go into the season not drawing up a bunch of Fulgham stuff, you know. Fulgham's good, but you know, you just need a little bit, you need a little bit more, because they're probably going to trade Zach Ertz during the draft too, right? So at some point you would imagine that that's going to happen. So
yeah.
Getting targets back somewhere for Jalen Hurts is probably going to be something that you're going to have to do there. That's a lot of Jalen though too. Hurts, Rieger, and Waddle.
That is, yeah.
You know, is that a consideration if you're the Eagles? I don't know.
There's every time you say Jalen, like three people are going to turn around in the locker room, and that's chaos.
Yeah.
Communication issues. They'll have to work through that.
Chip Kelly would have never stood for this.
But we will give them Jalen Waddle at 12 to the Eagles here, which brings us to the Chargers. And do they continue to build around Justin Herbert on the offensive line? Do they turn to the defense at some point and try and build up an aging unit at this point? What do they do? Everybody yell their ideas at the same time.
Jenny, what do you think?
I think offensive line would be a strong consideration here. They've certainly added in free agency, but I think they could benefit from continuing to add in the draft.
I agree. I mean, really what you're looking to replace target-wise is basically Hunter Henry, right? Which I think you could do in the second or the third round of the draft. You could find something comparable, just to help your offense. But if you get someone like, I mean, I don't know where they're looking, but you know, that tackle spot, to me, that left tackle spot is a super glaring issue for them and something that they definitely need to get fixed. I think that's among the more glaring, like, need-based picks that a team would need to make that would make some sense here. I think you could even reach a little bit and grab somebody. The offensive tackle class is not that bad beyond the top two guys. Like, I do think that there's some decent talent there.
Now, corner is another glaring need, too.
True.
It's an unusually deep tackle class this year, offensive tackle class. We just don't see that anymore in the league. I don't know. I would be curious to see Elijah Vera Tucker get a shot at offensive tackle, but I understand most teams have penciled him in as a guard. So who are we looking at here, Connor? Probably someone in the Darisaw, Tevin Jenkins type of mold here, as sort of a bigger bodied. If you were pessimistic, you would pencil them as right tackles, but I think, especially now that the positions are kind of interchangeable anyway, I think that's fine going left tackle with someone like that.
Yeah, I like Darisaw. I think he works there. In his entire career at Virginia Tech, he only allowed 10 pressures, 10 quarterback pressures over an entire collegiate career. That's pretty amazing. So I think Justin Herbert would appreciate that. That's something that I think that's something he would like.
I think so too. Let's give him let's give him Christian Darisaw, Virginia Tech offensive tackle, to the Chargers at 13. Real quick, part two recap here. We had the Broncos taking Mac Jones. We had the Cowboys taking Patrick Surtain. The Giants taking Kyle Pitts. The Eagles take Jalen Waddle, and the Chargers take Christian Darisaw at 13. Which brings us to the Vikings, who they have all these draft picks. Is it they have like 1,000 draft picks in this draft, so I guess they can stand to roll the dice a little bit at the top here. We know they have tried to bring in that complimentary edge rusher for Danielle Hunter to play opposite him. That did not work out with Ngakoue, and that's a need there. And they, I don't know, just until the end of time, they're going to be looking for offensive linemen in Minnesota, because I think they have guys who hold up pretty well as run blockers. They have so many guys on that line who cannot pass protect for any, like, it's been a disaster for, I don't know, the last decade. So those are needs. Safety with Anthony Harris going away. Do you get someone to complement or maybe even long-term replace Harrison Smith at this point? Lots of needs on the Vikings all of a sudden.
Yeah, they have a lot of work to do. I think those two positions that you outlined in the trenches on both sides. You know, edge rusher and offensive line are the two glaring ones, as well as, you know, adding to the need at edge rusher is the uncertainty about Danielle Hunter's future. I guess unhappy with his contract, and he's still coming off of the neck injury that sidelined him in 2020. So I think that sort of adds to the need there. But as you said, Gary, maybe it doesn't make sense to take an edge that high this year.
It's an interesting like thought, right? Like, I don't know. Like, is it as bad as we're making it out to be? Or, you know, is there some talent to be found there? I don't know. I mean, if you're the Vikings, is there an excitement factor essentially in the fact that you get to set the table here and you get your choice of every edge rusher in the draft? I don't know if that's an attraction, but if you're Mike Zimmer, who is so defensively focused and is going to steer everything that way anyway, if it's not something in the secondary, I think we would be asking ourselves probably a similar question about safety anyway, right? Is it too early to take a safety? The Minnesota loves layering cornerbacks, so maybe it's not too early to take a cornerback there, but I don't know. I think there's an attraction to the fact that maybe if it's not a phenomenal edge class, you still get the one guy that you view as better than everybody else at the position.
I think there's a couple things to be said here. I can't imagine them going cornerback again, although I guess Jeff Gladney's issues with a domestic violence arrest, can they count on him ever playing football again? We're going to find out. When you're looking at the value of safeties in the league right now, with so many teams going cover two looks, it's the position so devalued at this point across the league. And if you're looking at the edge guys, again, I'm not crazy about any of the edge guys. You're probably looking at Gregory Rousseau, Jalen Phillips, and Quiddy Pay here at this point. The one thing you would say about taking one of them in round one is obviously Zimmer wants that complimentary edge to Danielle Hunter. That's why they went out and got Ngakoue. The issue with Ngakoue, even if he had a great year last year and the Vikings made the playoffs and all kind of worked out, you're going to basically have to pay him more than Danielle Hunter. And that just sort of rubs the salt in the wounds of Danielle Hunter wanting the bigger contract anyway. We know the Vikings are not in great cap shape regardless. So it's almost like taking this first round edge rusher, or if they like guy in the second round, basically finding that complimentary edge rusher in the draft gives you that excuse to say to Danielle Hunter, well, you know, we brought in a guy, we're not paying him more than you. Like, I'm sure they'll do right by Hunter on the contract anyway, but it sort of takes a little bit of that heat off of it if you get this guy in on the as I would say, artificially deflated rookie wage scale contract here.
That's a lot of things to consider, Gary. You said maybe a few things, but that's a lot to chew on there.
It is. And this is what they're doing in Minnesota right now as you all try to sleep or listen to a podcast or possibly both at the same time. If this is what you listen to while you try to doze off. I think it's down to like, I don't know if either of you have an opinion on the top edge in this class. I think it's Rousseau. I'm open to arguments because, again, I think all these guys have their charms and their flaws, and that's just the way life is going to go. If it's not one of the edge guys, you're probably talking, you know, maybe you're talking Elijah Vera Tucker at this point. And address the offensive line here. I don't think they're going back to the secondary at this point.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree. My favorite edge player in the draft is Jalen Phillips, but I think if you're looking for more of a stylistic fit, it might be Quiddy Pay. I mean, that's who I have the Vikings taking in my draft, my mock draft. A four game season this year, basically, for Pay and in 2020, and he had 17 hurries, 23 quarterback hits over four games. That's pretty good. That's incredibly productive. And so I think that stands out. Everyone seemed to be going wild about the pro day, and that seemed to go well. So I don't know. I think he makes some sense there. But it is what it is. You know, if you don't see the positional value there, I could easily see them just going with the best player available, you know?
Let me ask you this. I think the Vikings develop those edge guys so well. I think they can look at this class and say, well, who's got the biggest upside? Is it Jalen Phillips, who, you know, he's a bit of a one-year wonder, you know, a top high school recruit who, you know, almost walked away from football at one point after he left UCLA and then reemerges at Miami as this stud last season. Do they look at him and say, this is the guy we can mold into the best possible player because we've seen our staff do that before? Or do they, you know, I think they go that over necessarily production on the at the college level.
That's a good point. That makes a lot of sense. File this under like super meaningless things, but I did find it interesting that Miami's defensive coordinator called him like the best player that he's coached like in his entire career. And I think he's been coaching for like 35 years or something like that, that guy. And again, I mean, that's what you say, you know, around this time in the draft to try to get your player selected higher. But it seemed to be, you know, just an interesting thing to go out on a limb and tag on a guy. So I do think that's interesting, at least. And again, I mean, you're going to need high upside, and you're going to need it immediately in that division. You know, you can't really afford to spend time developing a guy. So maybe that makes sense. You know, I do agree. I think that's a good point there.
Let's do Jalen Phillips here to the Vikings, if there are no objections, as the first edge guy off the board here in our mock draft exercise.
Sounds good, Gary.
And that will bring us to the Patriots. And again, as we've discussed, we're a podcast of laws. We do not do trade-ups in this. I mean, I don't know. You guys do radio hits. We do radio hits all the time around the nation, around the world. And everyone wants to know what the Patriots are going to do. Are the Patriots going to trade up? And you just shrug your shoulders and say, like, they usually don't. But if you look at their last four draft classes, those haven't been very good draft classes, and that's why they're in the position that they are in. So, gut feeling, do the Patriots trade up in this draft and try and get one of the quarterbacks?
My gut feeling is a no.
Interesting. What makes you think that?
Just my gut, you know. No, I don't know. I'm just not sure that I see them falling in love with a guy to do that for.
I don't
know. What do you think, Connor?
Well, this is the part of my process every year when I'm filling out the mock draft and I'm trying to gauge what Jenny knows and when...
Very little, Connor, is what you should ascertain.
And when she has a take like this and I have the Patriots taking a quarterback, it makes me extremely nervous and it makes me want to rip up everything that I have written down so far because if you're not feeling it, then I'm not...
You have different scenarios. And in this mock where we're at right now, five quarterbacks have gone in the top nine.
Right, which is a lot.
Yeah,
and so in this scenario, like, I don't necessarily see them taking somebody as it's constructed. If we're following, if this is a real universe and this is something that's actually happening, maybe New England tries to develop one of these second-tier guys, which we're now hearing a lot about. You know, there's some buzz for some of the kind of those second and third round guys that might be available and it might be a good part of this class. So, yeah, I don't know. Beyond that, if you're Belichick, I don't know what you're necessarily looking for here. I mean, you know, there's a lot of good linebackers in this class. There's still good wide receivers. If Waddle went to the Eagles here at 12, you still have a guy like maybe Rashad Bateman that can help you round this out and turn this into a powerhouse. But to me, it's like, what was the point of going out and getting all these guys if you're not going to have a quarterback that can stretch the field beyond what Cam Newton provides you? Like, to me, the offseason felt like it was setting itself up for another quarterback, unless there's something that I was missing maybe about what Cam Newton could do on film last year.
All right. Well, the quarterbacks are thin here. I don't know. I mean, you're probably not going like a Davis Mills type.
Yeah,
I mean, 15.
That would be the next. Yeah.
So, if we're stepping away from quarterback And again, in our exercise, the top five are off the board at this point. Do you chase a? We have Caleb Farley on the board. Do you chase him as a Stephon Gilmore heir apparent? Micah Parsons very much fits the Patriots style mold as far as what he does at linebacker. Mm-hmm. And look, they never really go edge rusher. They tend to try and pick those guys out on day two. It hasn't worked terribly well the last couple of years, but that's kind of their MO. But to me, this is like a Farley versus Parsons call. I'd go Parsons here, just as a guy who really fits what they do in Foxborough.
Yeah, I think Parsons is a good fit. I was going to say that cornerback is a little bit of a wild card, just because yeah. how central it is to Belichick's defense and mm-hmm. the fact that this might be the last year with Gilmore. But if it's down to Parsons versus Farley, I think you're right in Parsons being the pick there. And he's a very explosive player that can, you know, they need a difference maker. They need difference makers everywhere, right? As, you know, they're trying to rebound from last season. And Parsons is that player who just kind of makes an impact all over the field.
I think that's a Vrentis consensus pick there, then. Micah Parsons.
Nittany Lion.
I mean, you know.
To the Patriots.
That's secondary, Connor.
And that brings us to the final pick of this show, which is the Cardinals at 16. I mean, look, they need a cornerback. We just talked Caleb Farley a little bit. If they don't go cornerback, they could probably use some reinforcements on the offensive line. This is also probably one of the teams we should whisper this in podcast land, but they do need a running back, so... You know, do they like one of these running? I did like a Najee Harris or Travis Etienne or one of those guys. But cornerback and offensive line probably feel like the most glaring needs at this point.
You know what I think their most glaring need is? It's wide receiver. And let me tell you why. Not a single, like all the other units are so bad or average that drafting one player at any of these positions is not going to turn them into a special team or fix any of their problems. But drafting one of these guys out of the generational receiver class and making him your number four guy and increasing the amount of time that you're able to go four wide, they do it 35% of the time, which is way more than anybody else in the league already. But why not do it all the dang time and make yourself impossible to stop and just outscore everybody else in the division, and then, you know, and then turn your game over to the pass rushers that you got in the offseason. You still have Chandler Jones, you have J.J. Watt. To me, like, that would be the situation where I would pound the table for another one of these wide receivers, make it so you're just averaging 35 points a game and try to push the table that way, because you take one average offensive lineman in the middle of this round and it's not going to make your offensive line that much better. You take one cornerback to try to replace Patrick Peterson and it's going to take him a lot of time. You know, when's the last time really, maybe outside of Lattimore, that we've seen Denzel Ward, where a guy comes in first year and plays to a level where he earns that first round, that theoretical first round pick status? But receivers, I mean, you know, I don't know. I love that. You make yourself so ridiculously strong that Christian Kirk or Andy Isabella is your number four wide receiver, and they're all on the field at the same time.
Connor, that's a pretty compelling argument. I'm still sticking with corner for the Cardinals, but I really liked how you laid that out. It's just such an acute need at that position with Patrick Peterson gone, and where they're sitting in the draft, they should be able to get, say, the second best corner on the board potentially, and that's how it's shaking out in our mock at least. And so I think that would be a really good outcome for them.
It is a great point though by Connor, and they I mean, look, that offense is basically a bunch of dudes running ISO routes. They don't really create a whole lot of opportunities for receivers to sort of get schemed open, so you need great receivers who can win one-on-one. That said, I also would rather take a cornerback here. I think they should go receiver round two. I think they should do it day two. But I think here they go cornerback.
You guys are just ruining Keim time for me, but that's okay. I see the floor.
Caleb Farley, Jenny?
Sounds good.
Caleb Farley. And that does it for part two of our mock draft series here. And I'll do a very fast recap of the 16 picks so far, and then you can tune in next week and get the penultimate episode of the series. Number one, Jaguars take Trevor Lawrence. At two, the Jets take Zach Wilson. Three, 49ers take Trey Lance. Four, the Falcons take Penei Sewell, the Oregon offensive tackle. At five, the Bengals take Rashawn Slater. I don't know why I pronounce it Rashawn. Let me do that one more time, Shelby. At five, the Bengals take Rashawn Slater, Northwestern offensive tackle. Six, the Dolphins take Jamar Chase. Lions take Devontae Smith at seven. Panthers settle on Justin Fields with the eighth pick after a long, drawn-out debate there. At number nine, the Broncos take Mac Jones. Cowboys at 10 take Patrick Surtain the second. 11, Giants take Kyle Pitts. 12, Eagles take Jalen Waddle. 13, Chargers take Christian Darrisaw. 14, the Vikings take Jalen Phillips. 15, the Patriots take Micah Parsons. And at 16, the Cardinals take Caleb Farley, the cornerback from Virginia Tech. Jenny, Connor, we'll do this again next week and then one more week after that, and then we'll have a mock draft.
Sounds great, Gary. This has been really fun.
Then after this, we can mock draft the best mock draft picks that didn't make it into this mock draft. It'll be great.
That's a plan. I think that's absolutely a plan.
Just content creating content.
You guys have your mock drafts. Connor's is going to be out this week on Tuesday. Jenny's, I think, is a week from Tuesday. And it's just going to be mock draft chaos. So many mock drafts, you'll just hate mock drafts by the time it's all said and done.
But if you did, we could stop doing them. So really actually hate it. You know what I mean? I got really close to the microphone there, which I wasn't supposed to do. But, you know, if you really do stop liking them, then we won't do them as much, you know. But if you like them, then we're going to do them. So.
Good advice, Connor.
It's up to you guys out there.
That is wise words to wrap up part two of the mock draft series. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gremling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of the podcast is Scott Brody. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed, as well as the feeds for the Weekside Podcast and the Albert Breer Show. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.